Zvachim, Perek Tes, Mishnah Zion 9-7, and we wrap up the Perek with this Mishnah here. The Perek had started out by saying that the Mizbeach is Mekadesh Esaroilo. That means that what is fitting for the Mizbeach, even if it shouldn't go on the Mizbeach, once it's there, we leave it there. And we spent a lot of time defining exactly what is Roy, what is Lo. So here our Mishnah says, Kashem Shem Mizbeach Mekadesh Esaroilo, just as that's true, things that go on the Mizbeach proper, Kach HaKevesh Mekadesh. The same rules apply for the Kevesh, which is the ramp that leads up to the Mizbeach. So that means, you might have thought, when you look at the picture, you think the Mizbeach has like two components. It has the big, I'll call it the square shape, that is the where the fires go. You know, we have like the Yesod, and then we have the Sovev, and then on top of that we have the top of the Mizbeach. And then we have a second sort of wedge-shaped ramp that leads up to it called the Kevesh. You might have thought they're sort of one unit called the Mizbeach. Wrong. There are two separate units. In fact, there's actually a gap between these two components. The Mizbeach Achitz on the outer altar is one thing, and the Kevesh, the ramps that leads up to it, is a separate thing. They're not connected physically, and they're not the same thing. Nevertheless, they are connected exegetically, meaning that the Psukim do have an extra word S, which connects the halachas of these two, enough to say that just as someone which goes to the Mizbeach once up there stays there, so that same, if it's, that would be true regarding the Mizbeach, it'd be equally true for something on the Kevesh, on the ramp itself. Now, the Mishnah transitions now to like a similar but different point now beyond the Mizbeach. Kishem Shem Mizbeach Vaha Kevesh Mekaj Nesaroi Lehen. Just as certain things shouldn't go on the Mizbeach, but if they end up on the Mizbeach, or the ramp for that matter, they stay. So too, Kach HaKelim Mekajim. So too, the utensils, the consecrated utensils, called the Klisharis, each called the Klisharis, the Klisharis, they, if things go inside them, they become consecrated, such that even though really it shouldn't have gone in there, and shouldn't have gone, then, let's say, been put on the Mizbeach, now that it's in the Klisharis, we do put it on the Mizbeach, it becomes, you know, eligible to go on. This would be true for blood, as well as for wine, oil, and the like. Now, the Mishnah is going to basically now say there are essentially two kinds of utensils in the base of Mikdash. Some utensils are simply the good old-fashioned things for holding stuff, like cups and bowls, okay, like a mazrek, and like the cup, you know, the containers that you have for holding the different things that go on. But there's also measuring devices, okay? Now, the measuring devices are very specific to measure out. Some are for liquid measure, some are for dry measure. The liquid measure come in a bunch of shapes and sizes because there's a bunch of different liquid amounts you could need. As far as the dry measure goes, essentially every mincha, which is what you're using the dry measure for the flour, comes in exactly one quantity of flour, which is an isaron. Isaron means a tenth. It's referring to a tenth of an eifa. An eifa works out to 432 eggs. It's like the largest of the dry measures, essentially. If you remember Askalav Gudu, that mnemonic, so the first eifa is the first one. Okay? In any case, so it works out to 432 eggs, so an isaron, a tenth of that, is 43.2 eggs. It doesn't matter. The point is, the recipe for every mincha uses that exact same measure. The only exception is the daily chavitinah from the Kohen Gadol is divided into two half isaronot. So there's a separate measuring cup, in fact, for a half isaron. But that's all that there is. Okay? So we're going to differentiate now between regular a ka'ara, like a bowl, just for holding whatever it is, a mincha, or for that matter, intestines for emurim and the like, and the measuring devices, okay? And we're basically going to say, says the Mishnah, kli halach, a utensil that's for holding liquids, mekachnes halach, so it will consecrate liquids that go into it, blood, oil, wine, umidos hayavesh, and the containers that are used to measure dry, again, that means like an isron measure for flour, mekachnes hayavesh, they will consecrate flour that goes into them. Ein kli halach mekachnes hayavesh, but if you put the wrong thing in the wrong thing, for example, you put into something which is designated specifically like for a wet measuring device, which won't be an isaron because that's on a measure of liquids, and you put flour inside that, so since the ravia sahin or whatever the story is not applicable to flour, it doesn't belong there, it won't mekadesh it. And the measuring cups for dry won't consecrate the liquid, meaning the liquid has no business being put inside an isra measuring cup, and therefore won't consecrate it. Now, Let's just take a step back for a second, understand like what this is dealing with when we say Mekadesh and sort of the halakhic ramifications. This is important. Perhaps I should have said this first. I apologize. I didn't actually. I'm sorry. So when it comes to Balei Chaim, living creatures like a cow, goat, sheep, so a verbal designation is enough. Just simply saying Harezu Ola to a cow or goat or sheep makes it consecrated, and it will be, you know, now becomes, has what's Kedushas HaGuf, physical sanctity, or what I translate usually as intrinsic sanctity. In contrast, if you consecrate other things, even an animal, like if you have a zebra in your backyard, or a pen, or a bottle of wine or something, and you say you want to give it to the Beis Mikdash and your makdish it, you consecrate it, it only gets what's called Kedushas Damim, which means sort of extrinsic sanctity, or what translates literally is like financial sanctity. And the idea is that sanctity is sort of fungible. It's exchangeable. You can trade it or transfer it. So you can essentially redeem the Kedusha off of a pen that you consecrated to the Beis HaMikdash onto money and give the money instead. Or the Beis HaMikdash can receive your pen, and when someone buys the pen from the Beis HaMikdash's gift shop, so then the Kedusha transfers from the pen onto the money, and then the Beis HaMikdash can use that money for, you know, bedek advice for upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash and so on. So now, when a person is verbally designates, let's say, flour or oil or wine to be used in a mincha, so, or whatever, so then the verbal designation alone, saying this is the oil I'm using for my, you know, my nazira, so this is the wine I'm using as my nesachim, that only gives it kedushas damim, external, extrinsic, I should say, extrinsic kedusha, and it's not yet fitting to go on the mizbeach. To make these things have intrinsic kedusha, kedusha zaguf, they need to be put inside a kli sharis, a consecrated vessel that was used designated for the Beis Mikdash. In fact, as the Mishnah will say, it only occurs if it happens inside of the azar, the temple courtyard itself, and if it's appropriate for the particular kli, as we just said a moment ago in the Mishnah. And when that happens, when the, we'll call it foodstuff, goes, or whatever, blood, goes into the utensil and gets this kedusha zaguf, intrinsic sanctity, so then a few new rules kick in. First of all, so there's a basic idea of, besides just for the fungibility, the exchangeability, the transferability of the kedusha, which essentially I refer to as the tuma, the yotze, and the lina. So tuma means, like you are aware from elsewhere, that yes, a person who's tummy can make an apple tummy, but if it had hechsher and so on. But the point is, an apple, a regular chulin. Apple, or for that matter, I should have said a better example, a bottle of wine. If a tevul yom, who is a shein l'tuma, touches a regular tevul bottle of wine, or the wine in the bottle, it stays tahor, because chulin only can't become tame beyond the sheini status. This is all technical, but the point is, once it gets kedusha l'guf, it's now susceptible to additional levels of tuma, because it becomes kachim, you understand? So that's the idea in terms of tuma. Second of all, you have yotze, which means once it's consecrated as with kedushas haguf, it may not leave the temple courtyard. We discussed the yotze a number of times in the parak already, in the mesecta already, and also the prohibition of going out of bounds. And then you have lina. Lina means leaving overnight. So if I consecrate with just kedushas dam in my flask of oil to be used or whatever, so then it can, you know, it can be however long it takes to eventually get the Beis Mikdash and use that oil for my mincha. Okay, but once it goes into Kli Sharis, so now it gets Kedushas HaGuf, and it must be used that day. If it's left over till the morning, it becomes invalidated through Lina, being left overnight. So you see, when we talk about Kedusha here of our Mishnah, we're talking about Kedushas HaGuf, and those nafkinas kick in of, you can't transfer the Kedusha anymore, it's now susceptible to other levels of Tumah, it can't be taken out of the temple courtyard area, the Azara, and it can't be left overnight, Lina. Okay, so that's what our Mishnah is saying here, that essentially the principle is, if it goes to Kli Sharis, which is appropriate to it, now it gets Kedushas Guf. The Mishnah goes on to say, Klei Kodesh Shinikvu, if one of those utensils become perforated, they get a hole in it. So the general rule by all utensils, Kalim, is that if they can serve their original function, so then they retain their status as a Kli. And if they can't, because they're broken, then they don't. Now, there is some flexibility in terms of what defines previous function. But in the Beis HaMikdash, there's a principle, which is that Ein anios b'makom ashirus. When you, literally, which means there's no poverty in a rich place. That's a literal translation, but it means that in the Beis HaMikdash, we want to give a sense of plenty and not scarcity. And therefore, if something gets broken or damaged or dirty, we don't repair it, right? In the Beis HaMikdash, if the Kohanim's clothing get a stain, if the knife used for Shechita gets a nick, if the utensil used for holding, you know, Nesachim gets a hole, we don't repair it. We just dispose of it and then get a new one. We make a new one. Okay, so our point of omission here is, so therefore, the status is very high. The basic idea is, if the kli was created to be a measuring cup for a hin, or a measuring cup for an epha, or a bowl for holding, you know, whatever, intestines and the like, so very simple. If the kli can still do its thing, then it's still a functional kli, and therefore it's mekadesh. And if not, then not. That's what the mission says here again. It says, kli hakodesh shenikvu, if your consecrated vessel gets a hole, im osin hem ein melachten shayu osin vehem shlemim, then mekadeshin. If they can do the same sort of thing that they were fabricated to in the first time, vehem shlemim here means not a second condition and they are shalem, but rather it means when they were shalem, when they were whole. So then mekadeshin, then they consecrate. Ve'im lav, if the whole makes it that the utensil no longer can serve its original function of what it was intended to do, ein mekadeshim, it's broken, and therefore it's not a kli, and therefore it won't consecrate as a kli sharis. What goes inside it doesn't get kedushas haguf. V'chulan, ein mekadeshin ela b'kodesh. At all events, we say here, whatever utensil it is, it can consecrate, but only if it's located, if the food stuff, let's say, goes into the utensil in the azar, the temple courtyard. If it went into Klisharis, but Klisharis was sitting in, say, the Ezra's Nashim of the Beis HaMikdash, and certainly if it's sitting out there in Yerushalayim somewhere, or, you know, in Ramat Beit Shemesh, so then the Kli is not Mekadesh, has to be into the temple courtyard.